Welcome to As for Football's Army Football Show. The Army Football Show is an insider's guide for cadets, old grads, and college football fans to follow the Army team throughout their season as they seek to beat Navy and claim the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. As for Football's Army Football Show is brought to you by Uniform Flag. Order yours today with 100% of the proceeds going to the Lead the Way Fund. What's up, everybody? I was trying to change my background to throw up the Army Special Forces uniforms. If you have not seen that, you need to check it out. They look way better than Navy's. I think they're going for the marble kitchen floor this year, but we'll probably see this afternoon. Guess what? This week in college football, Army smashed Liberty. Michigan ends the streak with an impressive victory over the Buckeyes. Bama escapes Jordan-Hare in overtime. And is there any way that a two-loss team can make the playoff? What's up, Trash Talkers? Welcome back. We are doing a combined college football roundtable and Army football show. Or if you prefer, we'll just call it Ring Knocker Radio. I'm your host, Rob, in Vietnam. We've got James in Oklahoma, Dano Icabesa coming out of coastal Connecticut, and Jordan in the city of Hotlanta. Well, it's not so hot right now because it's fall time in Georgia, but I'm sure it's probably warmer than here. And without further ado, Jordan, could you lead us off?
Thanks, Rob. So today, I want to remind everybody that our sponsor is Uniform Flag. Uniform Flag offers hand-dyed American flags made from donated U.S. military uniforms. They're 11 by 14 inches, and you can carry true American spirit into your home or business by choosing your fabric. They will hand-make your flag, and they'll ship it to you, and you can display it. So all the flags are dyed, sewn, framed, and shipped by their team in Columbus, Ohio. And they use die-hard technology, which makes sure that the colors won't run, and you'll have this flag for years and generations to come. Cool thing is everyone who makes your flag is a veteran, and Uniform Flag will donate 100% of their profits to help them support veterans in need via the Ranger Lead the Way Fund. Awesome company, awesome initiative. Definitely check it out. Get rid of some of those uniforms you have sitting in your basement.
Important question, Jordan, before you go on. Have you seen your uniform flag yet?
I did not. Morgan got it for me for my birthday, and even though I told her, like, I need to see this so I can talk about it, I can't ruin my birthday. So it is in a... wrapped in a box in the room next to me.
Hilarious.
No, I have not seen it. I got it. They were very responsive throughout the process.
Yeah.
But then as soon as it came, she took it and wrapped it. So.
That's amazing.
It's almost Christmas time. Nick the box and blame it on the cat.
I don't have a cat. I don't do well with animals. So.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway, speaking of not doing well, Liberty did not do well against a triple option last week. Army beat the hell out of them. A little tongue-in-cheek there, considering they're the Jesus school. 31-16, final score. We got up 24-3 in the first half, got a lot of short fields. Liberty kept trying and failing to commit fourth downs, and we would get the ball at our 45-yard line or the 50-yard line. We scored again to start the third quarter, and the Flames came back kind of bit by bit after that. The game was essentially over. Did get a little close for comfort. They were kind of driving down the field. You know, I think ESPN FPI had it like at 98% Army was going to win, but that 2% made me worried. We dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. Liberty is a good football team, great coach. This particular game might have seen that game was probably our most complete performance up to this point. So that was good to see as we head into Navy that we're peaking at the right point of the season. Dan, over to you for the offense.
Yeah, man. What can you say? They were outstanding. Black Knights rushed for 220 yards on 62 carries. That is just 3.5 yards per carry, but it seemed like more. I mean, they were breaking off some pretty long runs, and they completed a lot of third downs, even when they sort of got stuffed there on first down. Quarterback Christian Anderson went 3 of 4 passing for 102 yards and a touchdown to slot back Brahim Murphy. He missed one throw just a touch behind. They had that one open too. Fullback Jacoby Buchanan had arguably his best game as a Black Knight, 22 carries for 80 yards plus 3 touchdowns. He was just dominant. I mean, he was dominant over the Liberty guys. Slotbacks Brandon Walters and Tyrell Robinson both broke long runs. Each had two carries for 20 plus yards. Wide receiver Isaiah Alston extended his catch to 7 games, his catching streak. And finally, as I said, Army went 7 of 14 on third down, plus 2 of 2 on fourth down. They punted 4 times. Even those were dominant punts. They held the ball for 36 minutes. Offense was just outstanding in this game. I don't know if they were as good as the defense, but they were outstanding.
Really just fantastic, you know, whole team effort, but especially on the offensive side of the ball. Did not get overly creative with throwing the ball. We saw them return back to triple option, ran effectively. James, I think you had a tweet about some of the personnel versus who was supposed to be calling the game. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I don't know if all the viewers know this, but I ran the Azure Football account this weekend, which felt a little strange without Jordan on the net as well. But yeah, I was a little upset. You know, Jacoby Buchanan has 3 touchdowns, and not once did I hear fire the Buchanan. So Ross Tucker, we miss you, and luckily Buchanan's got another year, so we can hear some more of that.
Absolutely. Over to you for the defense, Rob.
All right, so let's talk about this. Defense wins championships, but they also win great football games, particularly down in Liberty. So Army's defense played outstanding. This is one of the best games that they've had all season. This is one of the college football's sackiest defenses against the sackiest quarterback, and it just didn't work out well for Liberty. The Flames double-teamed Andre Carter, but still gave up 5 sacks and 8 tackles for loss. And we kind of predicted that. We were hoping that it would be Andre Carter, but hey, yet and still, the rest of the team stepped up and got in on the plays. Army held Liberty, a great rushing team, to 79 yards on the ground, 5 of 15 on third down, and 2 for 7 on fourth down. And I think that 2 for 7 on fourth down was probably the most telling statistic of it. And I know that Coach Freeze was asked about why they kept going for it, and he basically was convinced that the analytics were telling him, playing against Army, that you would have to create opportunities to get extra touches on the football or increase your possession time. And so they went for it. Did not work out well. If you are 2 for 7, it doesn't matter if that's on third down or fourth down, you're not having a very good game. Eric Smith finished with 7 tackles, 1.5 sacks, and 2 tackles for loss. Nolan Cockrell got in the action early. He was the first sack of the game, I believe. He had 4 tackles, 1.5 sacks, and 2 tackles for loss. Jabari Moore led the team with 9 tackles plus a pick. The whole Army secondary played well the entire game, especially covering how deep they were in the depth chart and knowing how aggressive the receivers are, knowing that Liberty likes to throw the ball. And, you know, when you have a dual threat quarterback like Malik Willis, like, the corner play is just as important. And everybody did a great job. Finally, Army finished the game with 2 interceptions, 1 off a fake punt by quarterback Bo Nichols Paul. He had an interception plus Jabari Moore's interception late in the game kind of finished it up. Bottom line is the defense played great. Gives me a lot of confidence going into the Navy game, being able to contain a very athletic quarterback. And, like, if you watch the game, every time they zoomed in on Malik Willis' face, all you saw was frustration, because he is the guy that's like, hey, normally I can put these things together, put the team on my back, and win the game for him. And everything that he tried just wasn't delivering. I understand that there's 10 other players on the field, but when you have so much stock put into one player, that affects the overall tempo of the game. And if Malik Willis had a bad game, the rest of the team had a bad game, and so goes the story for Liberty.
Our secondary got lucky. Like, they did not give up any big plays, but some of that was just overthrows and then Liberty receivers dropping the ball. So I still think that's a little bit of a liability, but, you know, thankfully Navy really does not throw it that deep. But we'll talk about that on next week's podcast. James, over to you for special teams.
Yeah, special teams, kicker Cole Talley was perfect. He had 1 field goal and 4 point after attempts that were all good. Punter Zach Harding was the star of the show. He had 4 punts, averaged 47.5 yards. Not a single return on any of those punts. A long of 54. I believe that's his 15th punt on the year of greater than 50 yards. He dropped all 4 punts inside the 20, and then on one of them, he channeled his inner Tiger Woods, took out the short iron, and put it right on the 1. It was phenomenal. That was late in the game. It was an absolute dagger for that struggling Liberty offense. And it was a hell of a performance overall from Zach Harding. So still the big difference maker on Army special teams.
Yeah, special teams wins games. Special forces is going to win Army-Navy. you know, for those of you that are not on Twitter or social media or whatever, Army released its Army-Navy uniforms today at about noon, absolutely fantastic, special forces themed, you know, horse soldiers, 12 strong, all that kind of stuff. Make sure to check it out, buy some swag, watch some videos, drink some horse soldier bourbon. It's fantastic. Like, it's all over social media. Make sure you check it out. We'll be talking about it in depth next week when we have Cons from Barstool on the show. But now back to Liberty, good, bad, and ugly. Dan, why don't you take the good?
I mean, Army was good. Offense, defense, special teams, everything was good in this game. In particular, I'd like to highlight the play calling on both sides of the ball, just relentless blitzing from the defense until the third quarter. And then when they suddenly drop back into coverage, you could see Malik Willis get visibly confused. Like he had been hit so many times that he would step back, look around, panic, and then realize, oh, they dropped eight into coverage and then wind up throwing the ball away. It was wild. I mean, absolutely wild. And then on offense, it was exactly the opposite of the way that they called the Air Force game. And I mean, I just, hats off to Brent Davis. It was just amazing. He was super aggressive early, working the outside, throwing when it was there. You know, Liberty seemed to adjust a little bit, spread out their defense after that first drive in the second half. And that's when Davis went straight back to the fullback and just wore their asses out. You could see their whole defense just wilt and physically break in the third quarter. It was beautiful. I mean, beautiful. I so hope we see that again against Navy. Finally, Liberty's band played the alma mater, probably the classiest thing we saw all day from that famed university.
Unfortunately, Liberty, for a school that preaches what they preach, quite literally, you would think that they would have a little bit classier of a football team. Unfortunately, that was not the result on the field. James, you want to take the bad?
Yeah. So we said Malik Willis, you know, he's got a lot of talent. You know, he's going to be going probably in the first round of the draft this year, maybe second round. But he just couldn't get the quick passes. Not all of it was his fault. There were a lot of drops, which was unfortunate for him. And he broke a million tackles to get around. But he still finished just 52% passing on the day. Not a great look. He ran for 37 yards on 16 carries. So that does include some sacks. He was able to evade and move the ball with his feet a little bit, but not nearly as effectively as normal. Those Army defensive ends were there waiting for him because Army really only needed to rush four to get any sort of pressure on Malik Willis. The guy has a lot of bad habits. He extends plays a lot. That's going to be a lot different in the NFL when your defensive linemen are twice the weight. He throws a lot off his back foot. As I said, not every incomplete pass was his fault, but there were a good amount that were. And he didn't hit a lot of quick crosses when he had pressure in his face. His decision-making wasn't on point the entire game, and he was yelling at his coaches on the sideline. I don't know if you want me to take you through the ugly as well, because it's essentially the same topic, but he threw a punch at the end after a, you know, probably clean but somewhat questionable hit by an Army player after an interception. To his credit, he did get out on Twitter and apologize immediately after the game, but not what you want to see in a quarterback that you're thinking about drafting in the first round.
Yeah, it's a terrible combination for a pro. That thing, extending the play too long, throwing off your back foot, not hitting crossers when that's what's there. That is how you fail to make it in the NFL. That's like every bad thing in the NFL.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked about, you know, just, you know, throwing the punch and all that. You know, Dan, you talked about it in the recap, but like you could see his draft stock just, you know, start to go down throughout the game. Just, you know, as he couldn't make plays, he just looked worse and worse and more frazzled. And then it all just kind of fell apart. And at the end of the game, it's like you got a guy who had 52% completion, started a fight, and is not coachable. And like nobody wants that. And that's unfortunate that, you know, the kid was put in that situation because the whole Liberty game plan was like, hey, just give the ball to Willis and he'll make a play.
Yeah.
Well, that's great against a MAC team or a Conference USA team, but against an Army team when every single possession counts and we're playing disciplined football and we have one of the best defenses in the country, that's not going to work. So I think it was poor, you know, coach planning, but then also just, you know, you got to be better than that. If you want to be a professional athlete, you got to be better than that.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in. I do have one thing on the ugly. And again, we're throwing a lot on Malik Willis, but his offensive line was terrible. Right.
That's true.
When you look at a team that had such a breakout year last year by comparison to this year, and you look at the difference, it's the offensive line play. The offensive line was getting smacked around, as James said. In the third and fourth quarter, they legitimately were only sending a three-person rush. And we're still able to get pressure on the quarterback. You have an advantage. You're going empty backfield with one of the most athletic quarterbacks in college football, and he can't connect on passes because he doesn't have time. And that should not be happening, particularly with a four-man rush. There should have been something open underneath, but I think just as ugly as Malik Willis's play is, if you go back and you watch the game or even just the highlights, he was running for his life because his offensive line is terrible. There are no isotoners coming to those guys for Christmas this year.
Yeah, I mean, the line just – they couldn't give him – they couldn't extend the play long enough for him to be able to sit in the pocket or even step up in the pocket because they were getting beat at every position, you know, double teaming and still getting beat. So, like I said, not all of that is on Willis. You know, part of it was just, you know, the game plan that they had, but it's also just the offensive line and people not catching the ball. Now, you know, if Liberty receivers had caught the ball consistently, this would have been a very different football game. So in some ways we're fortunate that, you know, they had – case of the dropsies, but really just kind of a perfect storm working against them. Additionally, Liberty coach Hugh Freeze complained about keeping his kids motivated. He got $4 million a year raise. So I don't really know what you want. Like, you're the head coach. You've coached in the SEC. Do be the coach. Like, I don't understand that argument, but whatever. Dan, over to you for your take on the game.
Yeah, you know, it just looked to me like Liberty was expecting to come out and win this game in a walk, which is a wild thing to me, all things considered. I mean, I thought it was going to be a close game. Liberty looked like they just weren't ready. And then Army came and smacked them square in the face for the first 40 minutes of the game. And the whole team just melted down. You know, you guys are talking about all these drops, but those drops happen because you're forcing these guys to play perfect ball because they got to come back from a 4-score deficit. So you put that pressure on there and all of a sudden you get the dropsies. Yeah, you know, you'd like those guys to catch the ball, but they needed to be perfect. And that's hard to do. Perfect is hard to do. So that's it. You know, I don't know, man. There wasn't a lot of respect going on that field. And, you know, I don't need you to respect my service or anything like that. But if you're not going to respect the team and then you get blown out, like, that's pretty ugly.
It is. And you mentioned something about Senior Day earlier. And, you know, last week, Army on Senior Day did not perform to what we thought they would against UMass. And someone told me, well, you know, it's the emotional high of Senior Day. It's really hard to then get focused for the game when your parents, their families are like all that. And maybe that played into it for Liberty is, you know, hey, they were looking past Army, looking to a bowl game, thinking, hey, we're going to blow these guys out. It's Senior Day, not mentally focused, not emotionally there. And then we came out and we punched them in the mouth and we're up by 3-4 touchdowns to end the first half. And then you just got nothing left in the tank. So some interesting parallels there. Thankfully, Army was disciplined enough, talented enough to beat UMass when we needed to, but Liberty was not. Rob, your takes?
Yeah, just real quick to jump on Jordan's point, what you said, it's very much a sandwich game, right? So you're at the tail end of the season. You got a team that you think that you're going to beat. You're looking forward to the bowl game in the postseason just to get that one last chance to get yourself on television and create those opportunities for you in the future. And it bit him, and it bit him pretty hard. I mean, you're a wide receiver. That's what you're supposed to do is catch the ball. If you're dropping the passes, like, why are you even on the field? Like, we could pull somebody out of the stands and throw a jersey on them and let them play ball. The visual frustration on Malik Willis' face is basically explains the whole kind of attitude towards them for the whole time, because he was frustrated after the first or second series. It wasn't just, you know, because he was getting knocked around. It was because he was like, man, we're supposed to be blowing these dudes out. You know, very, very reminiscent of you're playing backyard football with your buddy and he doesn't realize that, like, your athlete, a collegiate athlete, and then you're skinning this dude, you know, you're skinning this dude up, running a skinny post, and he's like, how does this happen? It's like, dude, you remember I played football in high school and in college. Shouldn't be a surprise that I'm whipping your ass on Thanksgiving. But, you know, but the other.
Did that happen to you, Rob? Is that a true story?
Yes, but not recently. I'm not as good as I once was. But moving on, the other part of it is understanding that Hugh Freeze, man, you're the highest paid Group of Five coach, and you got your butt whooped on national television. And how can you say that you had problems motivating your team? You have 4 million reasons to be the most motivated coach to motivate your team. And I think it's pretty embarrassing that you went out, you got smacked in the mouth by Army or any other team, because you had 4 losses this year by comparison to last season where you were running the table on everybody. I would like to say, though, quick shout out. I was watching College Game Day before everything kicked off. And David Pollack, you know, University of Georgia grad and all-time great sportscaster, came and gave a shout-out to Army. I wasn't happy that he called us for his super dogs, but he did call them for the outright win. So I think there's at least one person at ESPN that takes Army seriously. Maybe two, but Lee Corso will never admit it since he's a former Navy coach.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how good we are headed into Army-Navy. He's still going to pick Navy, even though he's going to be the only person. Whatever. James?
Yeah, so only things I had. Number one, first of all, Brent Davis with the play calling. So we mentioned that he came out swinging, took some risks early. They really paid off, and we love to see that. The other part of that is at some point you have to stop taking risks, right? When you're up by so many scores with so much time left, you have to say, okay, we're done throwing the football. We're going to bludgeon you with the fullback until you stuff everybody in the box to stop them, and then maybe we'll go for an outside run, and we're just going to churn this clock. And it usually happens sometime in the mid to late third quarter. Brent Davis did that with impunity and then ran the clock on Liberty, and they just never had enough time to get back. So great job making that decision of when to start milking the clock. Love to see that from Coach Davis.
James, you cut out there. Yes, Andre Carter still leads the nation in sacks per game.
All right. Look, sounds like James having some audio issues. Anyway, Andre Carter, you know, fantastic performance. Overall, like we've said, just a great team win. We executed in all three phases of the game, won on both sides of the ball. Really what you want to see, you know, going into Army Navy. I was nervous, admittedly, going into this game. Liberty's a good football team, and we didn't know how good they were based on their record. But just, you know, the product on the field was phenomenal, and I'm confident, you know, moving forward that we're going to smack the crap out of Navy. So let's go ahead and review fact or fiction. Dan said Carter gets three sacks. That was fiction. James said Army gets three turnovers. That was fiction as well. I said Army has 300 yards of offense. That was fact. Rob said Army gets an interception and fumble recovery. That was fiction. We all thought that would be fact.
Got close there too.
We did. It was close. Dan, why don't you give us this next commercial?
Yeah, so it's my favorite time when we talk about Craig Oxane, Vice President of Residential Lending for Draper and Kramer in Chicago. Craig is a graduate of West Point, class of 1994. He is a licensed mortgage lender in all 50 states, but he's based out of Chicago. Friends, Craig is one of the biggest VA lenders in the country. He has super competitive rates, and he is committed to giving you the best deal that he possibly can. I don't know how many of you guys ladies have bought a mortgage out there, have bought a house, got a mortgage. The process is not super straightforward. It is very confusing. So when you're doing this, you can go to like getamortgageinchina.com. We are recommending that you go to someone who is an actual person who can really help you get what you actually need. And that is Craig. He is a member of the West Point Network, and he understands how the West Point Network functions. He's helping us stay in business here at Aspen Football, and we in turn are helping you get the best deal that we possibly can on a mortgage by introducing you to the guy that you need. Why is he the guy that you need? Because Craig does not charge lender's fees for veterans. That is a monster savings. We're talking like $1,300. If $1,300 doesn't get you motivated, first off, I don't know what your problem is. Second off, Craig will also get you a long sleeve Aspen Football t-shirt that you will love. Okay, so Craig Oxane, Vice President of Residential Lending. Check it out. His link is on our website, aspenfootball.com. You can just Google him, but definitely go to the website. It's too easy. I'm telling you, this mortgage thing is complicated. Do not make it hard.
Absolutely. You know, $1,300, that's washer and dryer set, that's fridge, that's moving. Moving is so damn expensive, and if you can save $1,300, that's unreal. Yeah. So next up, quick plug for our mailing list. Do you like Army football but hate social media? And more importantly, does your dad like Army football but hate social media? Subscribe your non-social media having dad to our mailing list, astrofootball.com/subscribe. We send out one email per week, literally just one, and it's the links with all the content from that week. Super easy, goes right to your inbox, so you can see all the articles, the podcasts, the posts, everything in one place. Super easy. Do it. We're not going to sell your data. We are not Twitter and Google.
subscribe. I would. Nobody's trying to buy it from us.
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding. I would not do that.
Craig stepped in to be another sponsor, so we don't have to sell people's data anymore. And that's it from the Army show. So like Rob said, we're doing kind of a hybrid show between the Army show and Roundtable to preview, championship weekend. Army's off. So a little bit of a different format this week, but we will be back next week. Roundtable probably going to be talking bowls as those continue to flush out. And then the Army show previewing the Army Navy game. And we have special guest Connor Crehan, aka Captain Cons, from Barstool joining us as a special guest. So make sure to check out both of those shows when they drop next week.
All right. Now we are into the roundtable. Ring Knocker Radio, if you guys care to listen to that or whatnot. So anyway, other Service Academy action results from last week. Navy beat a bad Temple team 38-14.
And if you're not watching the show, James just put on his Michigan jersey. He just threw Army to the side.
Yeah, show you where his true loyalties are.
Sorry, Rob. Go ahead.
No worries. Funny. Ty Lavatai went 5-for-11 passing. He had one touchdown, no interceptions, and Navy rushed for 219 yards for 3.7 yards carry, but they fumbled 5 times and only lost 1, which is probably the saving grace of the whole team. The Mids defense held Temple to 182 yards and a total of total offense and forced 3 fumbles of their own. Bottom line, simply this. Navy is bad, Temple is worse, and they got the edge on them. Air Force rolls over UNLV 48-14. They had 511 total yards rushing with 0 passing yards, so they didn't even attempt to throw. Air Force fullbacks had over 200 yards rushing. Brad Roberts led the charge with two touchdowns. Air Force defense held UNLV to 214 total yards and forced 2 turnovers. Bottom line is Army won 8 games. In 5 of the last 6 seasons, they'll play Navy on December 11th if they win. The Commander Chief Trophy is a lock. They have a bowl game. Predictions are all over the place. Who knows where they're going to go? Hopefully, it'll be somewhat respectable. Navy had some stuff turned around this year, but their offense still has some real problems. They'll be going to the house after the Army-Navy game and probably doing some introspection to try and figure out what their next move is for next season. Air Force got a bad break and they lost their 3-way tie in the Mountain West Division championship game, so they didn't get to play. Utah State edged them out. They're heading to a bowl game. They actually are a good team with 9 wins. If you're looking to watch some Service Academy football in the bowl season, I think Air Force would be a team to watch, not only Army, but I think Air Force would be a team to watch because they've actually put together a pretty decent season. And again, the Army-Navy game is a ESPN classic for those of you guys that still play NCAA on your consoles. Moving into the AP Top 10, I'm going to pass this over to James so he can gloat a little bit. But here's
what to the victors.
All right, look. Fair play to Michigan. Great game for them. And to be totally honest, I try not to get too emotional about college football. One, because, you know, as a leader deployed, you get too excited about college football. Distracted soldier's a dead soldier. Being honest, I'm retired now, so I can be a little bit more upset about it. But the reality of it is to see Michigan kind of rise to prominence, at least this season, is a good thing for college football. Because when you see habitual powerhouse teams that struggle and suck, it doesn't make it fun for anybody to watch college football. So a 11-1 Michigan is actually good for college football, and I'm also acknowledging that for Trigger Joe. Joe asked me he was a little bit testy on the socials, but the reality of it is there's like 5 other coaches that probably could coach Michigan better than Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, wow.
Most of them are on staff at Bama, and so, you know, most of
Saban.
Hey, let me tell you something though. Other coaches aren't getting paid $4 million a year and then get their bonuses. So Harbaugh is the bargain of college football right now.
Yeah, true statement. And like I said, the guy should have been sweeping floors at Piggly Wiggly. But you know, even every dog has his day.
Hey, oh, let me tell you, not even Ryan Day has a winning record in the game. Yeah, he's now 1-1.
Yeah. Well, 1-1 is better than 1-6.
This year, 1-0 is better than 0-1. That's all I'm saying, baby.
Spoken like a true Michigan fan. Let's move on. So we're not wasting any more time on Michigan's quoting because what's going to happen? what's going to happen is they're going to look past Iowa and they're going to stumble.
Oh my God.
So what's going to happen is we're going to go through the top 10 because number one, as everyone knows, is the Georgia Bulldogs. But number two are your Wolverines from the great state of Michigan, the Ann Arbor Wolverines, coming through 11-1 after the big win over that four-letter word team. Cincinnati in at number three, Alabama after the close call in what turned out to not be a football game, comes in at number four. Oklahoma State, after their big win in I guess they were playing Stillwater against the Sooners, comes in at number five. Notre Dame at six. Ohio State at seven, or excuse me, the State University in Ohio at seven. Number eight is Ole Miss. Number nine, Baylor, and number 10, Oregon. So Cincinnati definitely has a path to the playoff. This is the first time I'll say Cincy's more likely to go than not to go. The only thing that can really hinder it is if Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC championship game. Then I think there's a good chance Cincinnati won't go. If Baylor beats Oklahoma State, that'll help a lot as well. Other teams in your top 25, you got number 12, BYU. Number UTSA dropped out after they lost to North Texas. Wisconsin is now out after losing to Minnesota, which kept them out of the Big Ten championship game. Number 16, Houston, headed to face Cincinnati in the AAC championship game up in Ohio. Number 18, Wake Forest, headed to the ACC championship game against Pitt. San Diego State is number 19, and the Bill Napier-less Louisiana coming in at number 20, their head coach, an all-star hire at the University of Florida now. Others receiving votes, you got Wisconsin, UTSA, App State, Minnesota, Purdue, Mississippi State, Penn State, Army, and Fresno State. Back to you, Rob.
Yeah, great rundown, James. And so we have some questions for the crew. We're doing a little bit expanded coverage because we have a little bit more time and we're doing both shows. But the first question is, do we see an Indy Cincy rematch if something crazy happens with the Georgia-Bama game and any of the other championship contests this weekend? What are your thoughts on that, Dan?
I definitely don't need to see it. I thought it was convincing as all hell the first time. My prediction is Georgia, Michigan, Cincy, Oklahoma State, if you're asking.
I agree.
James, how about you?
Yeah, the only way that you could possibly get a Cincy-Notre Dame matchup is you'd have to have Georgia blow out Alabama, or at least beat them. You'd have to have Baylor beat Oklahoma State, and Iowa would need to beat Michigan. And if all three of those things happen, they'll find a way to put Notre Dame fourth anyway so that they don't get a rematch.
I think that's probably true. Okay, so to give credit where credit is due, which is more impressive this season, the rise of Michigan or the fall of Bama? Dan, what is your take?
I've been with Michigan all season. I don't even care about Michigan one iota, but it's been an extremely impressive coaching job. Honestly, the fact that the man switched to blue pants after khaki pants after 20 freaking years in one color pants – honestly, I know it's stupid, but that tells me everything I need to know. That just shows you that you're willing to, you know, question the sacred cows that whether they are holding you back or not are actually holding you back.
He brought in the younger coaching staff, like the really super young defensive coordinator, and they said, hey, dude, you got to take a look at your wardrobe. Made some changes, and then they went to the playbook and did the same there. So
that's what I'm saying. It's just it's emblematic. It's all one thing. I mean, it's only stupid if it doesn't work. This worked. I'm totally all about it. Super impressed.
Jordan, what are your thoughts?
So, you know, Bama is 11-1. I don't know if I would call that a fall. Now, you know, are they the number one team in the country? No. Are they probably going to get shellacked by Georgia next week? Probably. But the fact that, you know, they have so much organizational turnover every single year from a management perspective and the coaches, and then also, you know, the athlete perspective, and they're still winning 11 games year in and year out. That is impressive to me. Like, they don't need to win the national championship every year for it to be a dynasty. The fact that they're in the top four every single year, consistently every single week, I wouldn't call that a fall. Now, if they get blown up by Georgia and they go to a game, they get like blown out by South Carolina or something in a bowl game, like, that'd be a little questionable, but I wouldn't call that a fall. Now, Michigan, absolutely. That is so impressive. The fact that they have struggled for so long and they bet on their coach And, you know, he took a pay cut, did whatever he needed to do to make it happen. And now all of a sudden, you know, they're winning games. They beat Ohio State, one of the top teams in the country, probably going to the CFP. That is fantastic. And, you know, you love to see it and you love to see hard work paying off. To me, that is much more impressive than Alabama losing to Texas A&M.
Yeah, I think, honestly, Texas A&M has always had Alabama's number since they came over to the SEC. So we're probably going to see that kind of wave happen every other year for the next decade or so. But honestly, like I said, I give people a lot of crap for being Michigan fans. But the bottom line is, like I said, I'd like to see a historical powerhouse team come back into prominence. So I will end by saying good job, Blue Pants. And we'll move on. Gentlemen, who do you think has the edge for the Heisman? Because that's been a completely uninteresting race all season, and I'm trying to figure out who actually wins. So what are your thoughts on the Heisman Trophy candidate? We'll start with Jordan this time.
I think it's going to live in the Big Ten or the SEC, not the Pac-12. No one in the ACC is impressive. And then, you know, American, yeah, whatever, who cares? Even the Big 12, I mean, no one has really stood out. I think you got Kenneth Walker from Michigan State, who's doing a great job. Bryce Young at Alabama. You could make an argument that Michigan's quarterback, maybe, but, I don't know. I think it might be Bryce Young after that performance against Auburn. But then again, if they go and they lose to Georgia, and I don't know if that's enough.
James, how about you?
I thought that Bryce Young's performance against Auburn was really, really poor. But regardless, give me Aiden Hutchinson or give me Def. Give me a defensive player winning the Heisman. Takes down the State University from Ohio's massive offensive line. Gets a couple sacks. Has the most hurries, quarterback hurries, from any game since PFF started recording that stat. Absolutely dominant in one of the biggest matchups of the year. Aiden Hutchinson prizeman.
That's a fair point. What about you, Dan?
That is a fair point. I never follow the Heisman race because I don't care. I really don't care. The last Heisman I cared about was won by Eddie George, and that was because I was a Tennessee Titans fan and only realized it after the fact. So my vote goes to linebacker Andre Carter II from Army. This dude is leading the entire nation in sacks per game. From freaking Army, a place where they have to always blitz all the time to get any pressure at all. And yet here is the number one sackinest dude in the entire college football. I mean, I get that Carter's not even going to be invited. I can live with it. Like I'm learning to move forward. I'm just saying, like, if you're talking about impressive performances, dudes who have been super important to their team, like, nobody's more deserving.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, when you look at it from that perspective, you know, the Heisman Trophy is supposed to be the most valuable player to their team in collegiate football. Unfortunately, I don't know if that's always the truth or always the case. I think the trophy is Bryce Young's to win or lose. If he goes into Georgia and wins and they win big and he shows off impressively, I think he's going to win the Heisman Trophy. Yeah, but after that, it's a toss-up. I thought Kenneth Walker had the best chance for a while, but then he went two or three games with like zero production. So I think right now it legitimately is in Bryce Young's hand to win or lose if he plays well or poorly against Georgia. And James has another thing.
Yeah, I know we've talked about it briefly before, but how awful was that Iron Bowl in terms of how that game was decided? You play 60 minutes of football and then you play like normal OT. And then it's decided by 2-point conversion. Like, if you're going to do that, if you're going to, like, go to 2-point conversions, just save everybody the trouble and flip a coin. If we're not going to play football to decide the winner of a football game, just flip a damn coin. It's awful what they've done. They got to go to either the NFL model or the spot and choose or the bidding for possession or something else. But it has just gotten awful. The winner of the Iron Bowl was decided by, in all essence, a coin flip and has nothing to do with the game of football.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think as we start getting into, you know, the whole thing is to cut down the games, right? So when you have those games that have like four overtimes, that's an extra like 30 to 40 minutes on the players and they're trying to cut the games down. I honestly think a sudden death overtime is livable. I think everybody does it watching professional football. If you're a pro football fan, sudden death works, you know, and just play the game. You know,
but even sudden death is hard because then you can play great for 60 minutes and then you lose the ball. You know, and the other team gets to go first, and then they kick a field goal. And it's like, you know, I understand, yeah, you know, defense, like, I get it. I think that's more fair than going back and forth with two-point conversions. But still, to me, that just doesn't sit right. And I understand they're in a difficult position because they don't want games to last for freaking 6 hours. But having to explain to my girlfriend who does not watch football how every single overtime is different, like, it made no sense. And she's like, why do they play it like this? Like even to her who, like, does not watch football, it made no sense. And, you know, if you want people to watch the games, having all these ridiculous rules doesn't help.
Yeah, I know I'm in the minority opinion on this, but for over 100 years, we had ties in college football, and we lived, and it was fine, and there were no problems. So I wish we would just end it like that, and there would actually be some dignity walking out of the stadium. But instead, you're walking out of the
dignity.
Iron Bowl.
Yeah, I don't agree that that's dignity either.
It's a tie. Okay, so Alabama and Auburn tie. Where do you rank Alabama? They didn't win. They didn't lose.
Yeah, Alabama is still a contender because they beat Auburn in a two-point conversion shootout when they should have tied and been knocked out of contention.
No, no, no. Listen, college football had a perfect overtime system. Up until this season, it was perfect. Occasionally, it went ridiculously long, but so what? That's beauty. I mean,
I'd be fine with that. Don't take away something
that's beautiful.
I'd be fine with that. I find the statement that there's more dignity in winning a two-point shootout than tying sort of horrendous. I'd rather a better team that ends up tied at the end of regulation getting punished more than seemingly doing better because they won some game in a competition that isn't football.
People get in fistfights in the street based over these rankings. Like, no one can agree on how to rank these teams. And if you throw ties into the mix, like, it's just going to be so much worse. And for a game, Army, Ball State, we thought, yeah, who gives a shit? Nobody cares. Alabama, Auburn tie? The state is going to burn down. Okay? Like, one way or another. You can't just say, oh, I guess we both win, because then you both lose, and then everybody loses.
But then maybe the country wins.
Yeah. Well,
oh, my goodness. All right, let's move on.
Yeah, I think the last point I will make is I think to avoid the ties, we flip a coin. Whoever wins the coin toss, they get to select offense or defense. You get your most physical offensive player for your most physical defensive player. They duke it out at the 50-yard line. We zoom in on the camera.
Oklahoma, baby.
At least that'd be entertaining. Yeah.
And then at least it ups the entertainment value. And, oh, by the way, with name, image, and likeness, who wants to be the quarterback with the big – that black eye that knocked out a linebacker from, you know, the University of North Dakota or some shit. And actually, you can market that a little bit better. But I doubt that we'll ever get any changes to the rules until somebody decides that it makes sense. All right, let's move on to the game of the week. It's championship weekend, so it's pick your poison. And it's basically you choose what conference you like best to watch the championship games. All the service academies are inactive this week. We start off on Friday, December the 3rd, the Conference USA championship game. Western Kentucky versus UTSA. That probably will be a good game after watching how UTSA did not do so hot. Yeah, against North Texas. And Western Kentucky is picking up steam. They look pretty good this week.
They're a trashy football team, but they can play some ball.
It's Western Kentucky. That puts it all into perspective. You know what I mean? Again, that's another one of those regions of the company, teeth brush versus toothbrush. Moving on to the Pac-12 championship game, you got the Utah Utes against the Oregon Ducks. I mean, Oregon should be favored in that game, but of course the Ducks are choke artists. They've already choked twice this season. They may do it a third time in the championship game. Hey, if Utah pulls it off, that would be pretty impressive. Moving on to Saturday slate, the Big Ten championship, or correction, Big 12 championship game is going to be the non-defensive played contest between Oklahoma State and Baylor. Take the over on that one for sure. MAC championship, you got the Kent State Golden Flashes versus the Northern Illinois team at 12 p.m. Got the Mountain West Championship. Air Force is going to be watching this one intently and butthurt. Again, this is probably why we need ties, because, again, this is what happens when you have ties, because you see Utah State and San Diego State playing rather than Air Force, which may be the better team of the two. Even though they lost the head-to-head matchup.
Against both those teams.
Yeah, but I think Air Force looked better towards the tail end of the year than these guys did. Sun Belt Championship, App State versus Louisiana. That might actually be a good game. App State is always a game opponent. And Louisiana's looked good the last few weeks. The SEC championship, not that we want to see this again, but it's Alabama versus Georgia. And this will be like the 47th rematch in the last 2 years between these two teams because they seem to keep winning. The AAC championship will be the University of Houston versus Cincinnati. This may be the dream smasher for Cincy if they can't pull it off. I think Cincy will be in the playoff unless it's a super, super close game and they give, you know, the committee a reason not to put them in. The ACC championship is Wake and UPitt. And of course, the Big Ten championship will be Iowa versus Michigan at 8 p.m. And that's a primetime game on the Fox network. And we will kick it over to James to give us the pick and trap games and the rundown for scores this week.
You got it. So you guys went 4-0 collectively last week. Dan had San Diego State and the points and Miami, Ohio, plus a point and a half.
Oh, that's so, it?
Yeah, it's a plus point and a half. They lost by 1 point.
Oh, baby.
I think the final line ended up being 1 point, so it would have been a mix, but you took them at 1.5, so so you get the hit on that one.
Oh, hell yeah.
Jordan, even though they unfortunately lost, Jordan had Iowa minus 1.5. That hit. And Rob took Auburn and the points. Also to update, with Army's win over Liberty, Liberty can no longer get to 9 wins. They're under 9 on the season, so Rob gets a point there. All that being said, final scoreboard heading into conference championship weekend. We got Dan at 5 points. Rob is 1 unit up on the year. And Jordan will be paying for beer at Army Navy at -3.
How am I -3? I was -2 last week, and I just got a point.
No, you were because I had to update both USF and UCF.
You already did that. You already took those points for me.
Jordan, I gave you the hit, and the spreadsheet doesn't lie. So if you'd like to go.
You know what? Whatever, it's fine.
You were at -3 last week, and I updated both USF, which didn't happen until this weekend, and your hit. So you were +1, -1. You had 1 season total over under, and then you hit your Iowa.
Look, man, I don't.
USF lost.
Whatever. This is your pet project. I play along.
You play along and you pay for beer. It's a...
I did not agree. I was not on the first whatever this was.
So all right. All right.
Contract of thing.
So the way that it'll work is for Army Navy, this will be the last, for the bet, this will be the last weekend. We are going to keep going. So we'll have you guys make picks on the line and over under for Army Navy as well. And then I'll give you 3 bowl season picks just to play it out for the rest of the season. But for this conference championship weekend, over to you, Dan. What are your picks?
I will take Western Kentucky at UTSA over 72 points, which I realize is insane. However, Western Kentucky is all offense, and they definitely cannot defend the run. While UTSA has one of the best rushing teams in all of college football. I don't know what's going to happen. I literally don't know who's going to win. I think UTSA probably has the advantage, but Bailey Zappe probably going to throw for 10 touchdowns, and Sincere McCormick might actually run for 300 yards, so we'll see. My other pick is Georgia -6.5. Wish I'd gotten him when it was Georgia -4, but here we are. Bulldogs are actually 8-4 against the spread this season, and everybody already knows that they're good, which is amazing. So there you go. I got 2 games that I'm looking forward to more than the others, just not picks, but Pitt at Wake Forest. I also think we might see 150 points in that one. And as we said, I'm so excited that the country is finally going to get to see Bailey Zappe play. Dude is the best pocket passer in all of college football. I want everybody listening to this to consider how good Wisconsin would be if Bailey Zappe was the quarterback for the Badgers. Enough said.
All right. Jordan, what are your picks?
I'm going to take Georgia at 6.5, like Dan. I think Georgia's the more complete team. I think Alabama will keep it close, but I think at the end of the day, Georgia's going to win by at least a touchdown. Friendly warning, if you are in Atlanta or you are visiting Atlanta, do not go out after this game because it is going to be absolutely insane. Stay out of downtown, stay out of Buckhead. Because the people who live in Atlanta or the people who coming for the SEC championship, either one of those are going to shoot you. So just stay home. Don't do it.
All right. So Jordan's got Georgia, same as Dan. Rob, and, what do you have?
I'm going to take over on two murders next weekend in Atlanta.
You're going to take over in the game as well.
Over on the homicides.
Two murders.
Yeah.
That's just every weekend in Atlanta.
Well, yeah, but I mean, come on. I need points, okay?
I'll give it to you. Rob, what are your picks?
All right, well, we're going to be beating the drum on the SEC championship. Bulldogs, again, best team in college football. I'm going to lean with them. I think Bama will play a little bit better, but if their offense is as constipated in the first half as it was against Auburn, it's a wrap. It'll be over at halftime. I think the Bulldogs will be up by at least two touchdowns if the Crimson Tide doesn't get their act together. And again, I'm going to say the game to watch, of course, is going to be the Big Ten Championship. And the reason why I say that is because this is absolutely the definition of a sandwich game. Big emotional high coming off of winning against your rivalry team. You're going against the team that you should clearly beat, and you're looking forward to the playoff. I mean, it is a recipe for disaster. Good luck, Blue Pants, keeping your team focused on the game. Because again, I think this is an opportunity to really get pitched. They did great. I think that'll be a good game to watch. But I appreciate the friendly competition that we are having, and I'm glad that I don't have to buy beer on the first time around. So we'll move on to Dan.
So just close it out with a favorite thing this week, as we do usually on the Army Show. We set this episode up more as roundtable than as the Army football show because we hopefully want some of our regular Army show listeners to give roundtable a try. Obviously, we're all Army fans first. I don't think that's a surprise, but I think it's evident that we love college football all the way around. If that's you, you know, try this show out, give it to your friends. We're trying to grow our brand beyond just Army. So far, so good. Yeah, sort of. And if you really like Ask for Football, please consider joining us on Patreon. We do weekly exclusive content, including our scouting report, which tells you how Army's opponents are faring, gives you a sense of how our strength of record will progress over the season, as well as a games and locks of the week post, which is me and Rob picking against the spread. We're both right under 50% on the season. And we also have an exclusive Firstie Club on Facebook if you want to talk about the games and other news with us each week. Picked up a new patron this week, and if you're watching the video version, you can see a shout out to all those guys on the screen right now. That's it. Thanks a lot. Last time, shout out our sponsors, Uniform Flag and Craig Oxane. We couldn't do without them. That's it. Go Army. Beat the bye week.
Beat them.
And beat them. Enjoy some college football this weekend, and we'll see you guys next time. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Ask for Football College Football Roundtable. Join the Ask for Football team on our next episode as we bring you more hot takes and college football analysis. We would also like to thank our sponsor, UniformFlag.com, where 100% of the proceeds from all purchases go to the Lead the Way Fund. Show your service and support a great cause. You can also find us at AskForFootball.com and across all social media platforms. I would also like to give a quick shout out to our globe platform presenters of our video podcast at VeteranTrashTalk.com.